Aya, and welcome to Napuan Ningge Shorts. Today, George and I are at the Richard and Carol Cox Art Museum on Miami University's campus in Oxford, Ohio. So we've had quite the relationship with the museum, spanning back to 2003. George, do you want to talk a little bit about that history?
Yeah, the Miami Center and the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma have a really great relationship with the staff of the Art Museum here. There's been multiple exhibits and exhibitions held here, a small exhibit in 2003 of Miami Tribe artists. In 2008, there was a really large exhibit that took up nearly all the space in this art museum to bring objects from the National Museum of the American Indian, Cranbrook, Institute of Science, and other places in an attempt to bring together as much of the material culture and museums of Miami people as possible to one location. And then in 2020, Kara and I worked together with the staff here to curate an exhibition of Miami ribbon work in the Central Gallery in the Art Museum. And then, of course, this year in 2024, we opened an exhibition on Minosayake and painted hide robes.
So 2020, that exhibit was quite special, but also short-lived. It opened in January, correct? Mm-hmm. And then everybody was sent home in March. So the Art Museum does have a virtual tour of it, so you can go through and you can read the text panels and see images of everything. But we were also able to have some staff come in. So George, Kara, and Jonathan Fox came in and they did video walkthroughs. So you can kind of see in 3D a little bit some of the objects. And you can find that on the Miami Center's YouTube channel. But that was also one of the first really community curated exhibits, if I'm remembering correctly, right?
I think the 2008 exhibit also had heavy community curation in it, but the 2021, I think, was really interesting because of our level of involvement from the very beginning on it. And you know, one of the things we really like to emphasize when we're talking about our relationship with the Art Museum here on campus is just how much of a great experience we've had engaging in community curation with the staff here. Very much are the museum professionals. No one in the center has degrees in museum science, so they are experts in taking care of the objects and in preparing them for display and, of course, creating all of the display cases and all of that to protect the objects. But then they really do turn to the staff of the Miami Center and to citizens of the Miami Tribe to help tell the story of the objects in the exhibition. And they've been really great allies in always fronting the story so that the objects, you know, of themselves don't tell a story. It's Miami people that wrap those objects in a story or use those objects to bring stories we tell about ourselves and that we share with other people to life. And so the staff here has been really wonderful. And I think it's really key to make sure that we mention some names. So historically, some of these folks have, the relationship's been so long, they've actually left the Art Museum. But Dr. Robert Wicks was the director of the Art Museum for years and was a wonderful partner in the earlier exhibits in 2003, 2008, and 2020. And other staff that have also since left was Cynthia Collins, who is a wonderful educator, Mark DeGennaro, who is the preparator for a lot of the earlier exhibits, and Laura Stewart, who really helped with organizing the loans for all of the exhibits. And then current staff who have been key and really helpful to the exhibit that we're looking at today are the current director, Jack Green, and the curator, Jason Shaman. And then the preparator for this exhibit was David Dotson. So when you're in this space really looking at how beautiful it is here, it's from a lot of the work of those individuals.
And before we turn to talk about the Minosayake exhibit, I do want to point out there are permanent pieces of Miami art in the Richard and Carol Cox Art Museum collection. So there is a beautiful sculpture by Eugene Brown. It has a really long title, and I always get the order mixed up. Do you recall it?
I don't remember the full title, no. But it's something like a tribe called Miami, a town called Oxford, a surveyor's stake, something along those lines.
It's a gorgeous piece. They have the wooden sculpture on display inside and then a bronze casting of it out in the sculpture garden. And they also have a pair of moccasins made by Scott Shoemaker. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, throughout their various rotating exhibits, they've also featured other Miami artists, including Jared Nally. They showed one of his twine mm-hmm. bags pretty recently as well. Mm-hmm. But circling back to the current exhibit, do you want to talk a little bit more about Mino Sayake?
Yeah, so Mino Sayake are painted hide robes that exist all they came from all over North America, but Miamia and Pewalia, or Peoria peoples, produced painted hide robes on deer skin and probably on bison skin as well, as an art form that preceded the use of trade wool blankets. So they're a way to both stay warm and have a beautiful decorated surface. And there's other uses for them too. There are luckily a few of these still in existence in Europe, in collections in the Musée de Quai Branly Jacques Chirac in Paris, France. And so the Reclaiming Stories team, which will have a whole expanded episode talking about this work, has worked to reconnect our stories and our peoples today with these beautiful painted hide robes that were likely made by Anoka or Illinois or Pewalia, Peoria people in the early 1700s. And this exhibit is like a first step in telling the story of that work of reconnecting. And it's the exhibit and much of the work to travel to France and visit with these beautiful objects is funded by an Andrew W. Mellon Foundation grant that came through the Humanities Without Walls Consortium that's administered at the University of Illinois. So we really want to make sure we say Mishinewe to those who have helped support this work with generous funding. The team's really big, the people involved in the work. There's citizens from the Pewalia, from the Peoria Tribe of Indians of Oklahoma, citizens from the Miamia, from the Miami Tribe of Oklahoma. There's non-tribal citizens involved, and we're going to do a much longer episode in the next season to talk about this work. But it's really wonderful to partner, especially with the Pewalia, with our relatives in the Peoria Tribe, to help reconnect with these hides and to bring the knowledge back from the Mino Sayake to our communities. And this involves, you know, the part that many people hyper-focus on, the art side, which is, you know, the use of paints to create designs on the hide robes. But the project is much bigger than that and includes our relationship with the Muzuke, with the white-tailed deer. So hunting, hide processing. It includes our relationship with the land, with the geology necessary to understand how to harvest the minerals that become the most of the pigments used in painting. And then reconnecting the images with the context of the stories that surrounded these exhibits, both Alasukana winter stories and Achimuna historical narratives. And then, you know, coming around full circle again, it's about people. So the Miamia and Pewalia are relatives. We've been relatives since before contact with Europeans. And this is one of the really nice major first step projects we've had to work together with our relatives among the Pewalia in building new knowledge for our communities. And there's many, many steps yet to come that we'll talk about in that expanded episode.
So I think one thing that stands out about this exhibit compared to our other exhibits is there are a lot of pictures. Because like mm-hmm. you said, this is the first step. And a lot of the actual painted hides, they're not big robes. There's only a couple of recreations in here. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the painted hide is actually small pieces, and it's not behind glass, mm-hmm. which I think is unique. When we were here a few weeks ago, well, I guess it was almost a month ago now, you could still smell the smoke of the hide. Mm-hmm. So that's very different than the other exhibits that I've been here in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an excellent point, Pekatua. You know, many of our previous exhibits, everything that's an object is behind glass. And while you're still not supposed to touch anything in this exhibit space, you could, because many of the objects are not behind glass because they're not historical pieces. They're new pieces created to represent our evolving knowledge of Minosayaki, of painted hide robes. And the first workshop we did on hide painting, which was led by our friend Michael Galban, was instead of, you know, learning on a giant robe, you know, that it took, you know, many hundreds of hours to produce, we painted on small pieces of hide that were made into bags. And so they're, you know, about 4 to 5 inches wide, maybe 12 inches tall with some fringe on the bottom. They're really beautiful, but as you said, and small, and you can get very, very close to them. They're not behind glass, and they're on smoked hide. So I think even now, if you get really close, you can still smell the smoked hide, which is just a wonderful odor. And it, so it represents, each of these bags were produced by different members of the team. And so you get to see how individuals are taking in what they're learning and then producing, again, beautiful works of art. Although I'm sort of ashamed to have my bag hanging next to an artist like Julie Olds' bag, because the quality of the art is a little bit different. But we're all on a separate path in terms of our ability to put paint to a surface. And I'm just in my beginnings.
Well, I have to say, we compared the hides that are hanging up that are not historical pieces to pictures of the historical pieces. And it was really interesting to see the differences. You know, there are artistic differences in there, but also recreating a design versus creating it on the hide itself made a huge, huge impact on the design. We talked about how there's sizing differences, so things might look stretched, or you had a really interesting observation about the lines on the one that's behind you, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what's really fascinating is the recreated pieces that were commissioned by a tribal spouse, Larry Hedin. You know, they're beautiful works of art, but comparing them against the originals that I've had the luck to see twice now in Paris, you can really see a difference in the level of skill and the level of detail. And so the hide robes, the Minosayaki that are in Paris, have amazing vitality of color to them still. And the differences in color are still really striking. You know, hide robes 300 years old have a really different palette of pigments and a kind of beauty of color than what folks can produce today. And then also there's a lot of background imagery in most of the Minosayaki that are produced with a clear sizing pigment like a glue that doesn't have any color to it. And much of that could be seen when it was originally produced very clearly, and that part has faded, and so you can only see it when you're up close. And basically almost every space on the hide that looks like blank space in a photo is actually full of incising work that, you know, someone working with a stylus painting clear material on the hide that would have sparkled in the sun and would have really shown when they were fresh, and now you can only see them kind of up close. And so there's a whole like really intricate texture to the original hide robes that you don't see on any of the works here today, because we haven't mastered those skills yet to produce produce painted hide bags or Minosayaki painted hide robes that have that degree of background texture to them.
I also like how you pointed out in the robes in Paris, you could actually see where hands worked paint into the hides, and you don't necessarily get that with these recreations.
Yeah, around the edges of most of the Minosayaki in Paris, the artists used ground vermilion or really ground hematite, so a pigment paint produced from mineral stone from our homelands. And this is different from the trade vermilion that was used in the middle parts of the robe to produce the color red. And so on the outside edge, they painted with their hands. They ground in this stone, this finely ground stone vermilion ochre around the outside of the robe, and you can see the kind of swirls produced by their hands as they kind of rubbed the ochre into the outside edge of the hide robe. So it's really, you know, powerful to touch a surface that your ancestors worked, and then to touch a space where you know like their hands worked it, not just sort of a wooden stylus or bone stylus, but actually their hands touched that surface in a way that, you know, you can see still from the swirls of pigment.
I think we could talk about this for much longer. Yeah. But is there anything else about the exhibit we think we should talk about?
Yeah, I think, you know, I hope that folks hear this in time to come see the exhibit before it closes in June. But the other thing that, you know, I want to make sure people understand is that this is a story of a work in progress. So it felt kind of strange to help curate this exhibit because we're not done with the work yet. You know, not that you're ever done with some of the other things, but we felt like we reached places of like solid understanding, so we were very confident in what we could talk about. And in this exhibit, there's definitely a lack of confidence yet because we're still early days. We're still really working on developing this knowledge. And the other thing I think that I want folks to realize is we've really tried our best to immerse the exhibit in our stories, because it's not just what you see that's important, it's the context of the knowledge and what you hear that the visual objects sit within and help communicate. And many times museums have separated objects from their peoples and their stories. And what we've tried to do here to the best of our ability is reconnect the people and the stories together with the objects.
So as George mentioned, the Mino Sayake exhibit will be at the Richard and Carol Cox Art Museum until June. Do we have plans after June for the exhibit?
Yeah, so for Pewalia and Miamia peoples, the exhibit is going to travel to Miami, Oklahoma. We don't have fixed plans yet, but it will go to one of those two communities' exhibit spaces. And then when it finishes in that community, it'll come over to the other. So Miamia and Pewalia people will both have a chance to see it, you know, in and on our reservation, probably for a series of months in each tribe's key locations. And then who knows, after that, maybe it'll travel to other museums. But that's all the plans we have so far.
Well, before we forget, we should say Mishinewe to the staff at the Richard and Carol Cox Art Museum for letting us come in on their closed day so that we could record this in a fairly quiet environment. but also all of the work that they've done to help make this exhibit possible. George, is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, just again, Mishinewe to the staff here. It's always wonderful to work with them, and they're so accommodating every time we ask to do something kind of a little bit outside the box, like record our podcast in the exhibit space.
Well, stay tuned this next season, and we'll have at least one full episode talking about the revitalization work going into Mino Sayake, all of the research, all of the cool stuff George got to experience going to Paris, and all the hard work going into this from Miamia and Pewalia and all of the other people who are helping with all of this work. So, Mishinewe and Neolaka Kokekate.
Hey, here, Neolaka Kokekate.